Paul Lambert und Karl-Heinz Riehle 1:0 für Borussia Dortmund.
Meine Damen und Herren.
Welcome to another episode of the GFB. Before we get into this week's discussion, though, I'll introduce my co-host with me today, which hopefully, unlike the last couple of weeks, has a healthy blend of humour and intellect. So firstly, it's this man's first, the one-year anniversary of this man's appearance on the podcast, George Balakrishna. How do you feel about that? I feel like it's been a really long year in that time, a long dark period.
Yeah, no, it's been a real dark chapter in the history of the GFB. I was actually thinking about this earlier because I had a feeling that it was around this time that I was on the podcast. Last year, and I was thinking, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Because I was actually sat in this exact position I am right now, questioning how much progress I've made in a year. What's changed? I've got a degree now. Where's that got me? Still sat in the same place at my desk in my parents' house. What else has changed? What, COVID twice, maybe thrice? I don't know how many times I actually got it. But I've made four great friends through the podcast, and happy to be part of the family now. We're a very happy, functional family. I like to think I bring a small amount of interest to the podcast that I didn't have before. Obviously not the intellect that you and Robert bring, but something in the way of humour in that down Roy's alley. So yeah, it's nice. My first jubilee. Expecting the street party when we finish this podcast. So yeah, it's feels good to be 1 year in the GFB.
Definitely feels like longer than that, but long may it continue. And we've got a man that's been here slightly longer than a year. Bob Haggis, how are you doing?
Thank you, I'm doing very well. I'm just slightly disappointed I didn't get quite the same fanfare as George did after my first year as well. That was a few weeks ago. But maybe it's due to the fact that I don't bring the same kind of humour that George does. But hopefully I can change that this podcast.
Yeah, just thinking, I've just been watching the cricket today. It's first day of the cricket in Barbados, and If Robert and I were to have just hit a century, 100 runs in cricket, I think they would describe this as an attritional innings. we've really seen out the new ball. We've not done anything too outrageous. Just played to our skills. Attritional is probably the word I'd say. You know, nothing outrageous. Nothing that's going to rewrite the history books. Just played within ourselves.
You've lost me. We'll get back to the sport we're actually talking about, football or foosball, and get into this week's topic of discussion. The Bundesliga's current crisis club, Hertha BSC, sitting with just 23 points in 17th place. Hertha, during the week, have taken the decision to part ways with coach Typhoon Korkut, bringing Felix Magath until the end of the season. And that also comes not long after the club's sporting director and former player, Arne Friedrich, was also relieved of his duties. But before we go in deeper into the current situation of the club, I believe Robert is going to give us a bit of a lowdown in the club's history.
That's correct, Colin. And whilst George has passed, and has received his history degree in the past year, history is also one of my favourite pastimes. So yeah, I thought I'd give the listeners a quick rundown of the history of Hertha. So it was formed in 1892 by two sets of brothers, Fritz and Max Lindner, and Otto and Willy Lorenz. They were in fact only 16 or 17 at the time, so one of their uncles had to form the club at the Polizeipräsidium in Berlin. And it was in fact named after a steamer called Fritz. A steamer called Hertha that Fritz Lindner had ridden on a few weeks before on the River Havel, which is near Berlin. So that's a nice little fun fact in case it comes up in a pub quiz in air sometime soon. they beat Southampton.
I'll be wearing my Hertha jacket for that.
Yeah, no, you can't. Well, you can't give away the fact that you've got a bit of an advantage in the pub quiz anyway. But as they beat Southend United in a friendly in 1910, and according to Wikipedia, were the first team from the European continent to beat an English semi-pro team at the time. So that's another feather in their cap. In 1919, there was a financial scandal, something that would come back to haunt them happen to Hertha a few times over the next few years, as they were exposed for paying players money and banned from the Berlin League for one season. This was, of course, at a time when the sport was purely amateur. The 1920s were the golden years for Hertha as they moved to the Stadion am Gesundbrunnen, known as the Plumper, which is the Berlin word for water pump, or the Berlin area of Gesundbrunnen, which is in the sort of north of the city. From 1926 to 29, they lost four consecutive finals before winning the German championship in 1930, 5-4 versus Kiel. And as I'm sure George knows, they beat 1860 3-2 in 1931 to win back-to-back titles.
Still haunts me to that day. I remember all
that. Yeah, especially because 1860 were 2-1 up with 10 minutes to go and managed to throw it away.
Yeah, four we had in the bag, to be honest.
I'm expecting
if only Sasha Mulder to take his chances.
Expecting to see a live tweeting from 60 in of that soon, but we'll see. They're one of the founding members of the Bundesliga, but were thrown out after luring players with money. This was again still at a time when the Bundesliga was supposedly amateur. And I think that was in the late 60s. And then in 1971, Arminia Bielefeld needed a win on one of the last games of the seasons, and offered the Hertha players 250,000 Deutschmark to throw the game. And the Hertha players took a suitcase filled with money that was provided to them by Bielefeld. And I think that George has got a bit of information about this kind of era in Hertha's history as well.
Well, yes, that's correct, Robert. Thanks very much for that synopsis there. But I think as we're talking about Hertha at the moment, but whenever we talk about them in sort of present day terms, we talk about how they're sort of a crisis club. There's always some sort of off the field headline, which is detracting from what's going on the pitch, and that they kind of seem to be riddled with scandal, really. They could be one of the most scandalous clubs in the Bundesliga or in German football. Like you said, they had their match fixing thing. But just before we started recording, I asked if you were aware of the money laundering scandal, which preceded the match fixing scandal. So essentially what happened was, a few years after the inauguration of the Bundesliga, Günter Herzog was the treasurer of Hertha Berlin. And essentially they had an issue in the start of the 60s of attracting players to play for them in the newly founded Bundesliga, because to add to the history lesson, obviously West Berlin at that point is an enclave, so it's not actually especially attractive to live in as a West German, as part of the Federal Republic of Germany. So they needed to be paid quite handsomely to actually go live in that enclave, because it's a bit of a strange existence. So they were like I said, they were paying pretty handsomely. And this was at a time where they started off in pretty typical German fashion in being pretty strict with the auditing. And they kind of realized that Hertha was consistently making losses and, you know, paying more money than they actually had. So this Herzog fella, not only treasurer of Hertha Berlin, he also owned a funeral parlor. And then what he did was he printed 55,000 tickets in order to balance his books. And yeah, he hid those tickets in the caskets of the funeral parlor in the coffins, thinking that the authorities wouldn't catch up with the West Berlin side. But yeah, unfortunately they did, and I believe that the punishment was they got relegated. So you know, maybe that really set the tone for Hertha in the 50 odd years to come, that they're always being plagued with some sort of scandal or you know, off the field issue. And you know, maybe the actions of Günter Herzog were replicated one too many times in terms of off-field misdoings in the coming years of Hertha. That's actually the only anecdote I have about Hertha. So I was surprised to know that it wasn't included in your history of the club, which is why I thought I'd just add that in. But that's all I have to say when it comes to the history of Hertha.
Well, that's why we compliment each other so well.
Yeah, and completely.
And so, yeah, after the match fixing scandal, the club had to pay a huge fine, meaning they had to sell Die Plumper to a Berlin real estate company in the early 70s. I would very much recommend the listener to have a search of Die Plumper or Stadion am Gesundbrunnen on Google, because it looks very different to any stadium that I'd ever seen before. Basically, behind one goal is just a huge sort of concrete a ramp, as it were, where it seems like the spectators were standing. So quite an interesting stadium and very sort of early 20th century architecture. So it was a relative period of success in the 1970s where the club played in the UEFA Cup towards the end of the decade. But by the middle of the 1980s, the club were back playing in the Oberliga Berlin, so the third division again. And between 1991 and 1997, they were playing in the second division in front of around 3,000 fans in the Olympiastadion. So you can think about how big the stadium is and how few fans they had. During that time in 1993, they had one of the most interesting stories in German football history and the German Cup history, where Hertha's second team, the Hertha Boobies, managed to beat a number of second division and first division opposition, and in fact made their way to the final before losing to Bayer Leverkusen. And I think surely they must be the only second team, and I think fourth division team who's ever made the cup final. And in 2002, the members decided to turn the club into a limited joint stock partnership. This is the Ausgliederung, which you hear about a lot in German football. So I think Hertha were one of the earliest clubs who sort of turned into this economic model, so away from a purely members-owned club. And they had a relatively successful period in the late 2000s with Marcelinho and Lucien Favre as manager. Before, sort of the late 2000s until 2013, they were one of Colin's favourite words, the Fahrstuhlmannschaft, where they relegated twice and got promoted twice in that time, before a period of relative stability with Jos Luhukay and Pal Dardai. And I think that's the history lesson over, and handing back to Colin.
About the point I take over, yeah. I followed a period of stability under Dardai with Michael Preetz as sporting director as well, who had a rocky start to his tenure, like a couple of relegations, but once Dardai came in, sort of steadied the ship, a few mid-table finishes, actually got into Europe, into the Europa League in 2016-17, qualified for Europe the following season. I'd say the club stagnated a wee bit, though. Things became a bit stale. He wasn't really the man to take them to the next level, and I suppose this is where the current period of the club's history begins, when Dardai left for the first time in the summer of 2019 and Ante Čović took the reins as Hertha coach. And it was also around about that time that Lars Windhorst, the club's investor, became involved with the club. So that's coming up in 3 years that Dardai left, Windhorst has started investing money. But since Dardai left the first time, they've had so many different coaches: Čović, Klinsmann, Nouri, Labbadia. Dardai came back again for another spell, Typhoon Korkut, and now they've got Magat again. And I'd say that period of instability would be particularly surprising given the amount of money invested from Lars Windhorst in that period. I believe it's over 300 million euros since 2009 they've invested. I think one of our previous episodes that Kyle was on, he sort of made quite a good point that probably would have been a better idea maybe to invest in a new stadium with all that money rather than the pretty average transfers that they've completed. I mean, I sort of made a wee note down of a lot of the players have signed with that money. you know, like towards the start of the investment, Escacibar, 10 million euros. Cunha, 18 million euros. To be fair, they made 8 million profit on him going to Atletico Madrid. Other players like Leuven, 7 million. Ones that particularly stick out were Luka Bakio for 20 million, Piontek for 24 million, Tosa for 25 million euros. And then more recently, the likes of Schvolo for 7 million, Richter, 7.1 million, Suat Serdar, 8 million. Just, I mean, I suppose in the context of Premier League football, I would say that's not really too significant in terms of high transfer fees, but the Bundesliga is quite different. It's quite rare. Outside the top four or five clubs, you rarely see clubs spending more than 10 million on players, I would say. I was going to say double figures, but that would be seven figures, isn't it? Eight figures, yeah. It's been a long time since I did maths, so forgive me. But I would say that's a lot of money wasted, and a lot of these players have already left, which probably says a lot about the success and the time that they've had at the club. But where do you think it's gone wrong for Hertha? I'll bring you in, George. Is it as simple as poor recruitment of players? Is it more the coaches, you think, that they've gone wrong? Or just maybe a bit of a combination of both?
I think you've kind of got to look at back to June 2009 when Michel Pleitz took over his, what, sort of 12 years as sporting director of the club, kind of characterised by, like you mentioned, some pretty poor signings, which both financially and in terms of performance were backwards moves. I mean, he appointed 11 managers in 12 years, which, and you think that Dardai was there for, what, 3 years in a row before Bobic took over as sporting director in 2021. But I think it's somewhat paradoxical that, you know, the 3 or 4 years preceding the money coming in from Lars Windhorst, you've got Hertha finishing in seventh and semi-final of the cup, sixth and quarter-final of the cup, 10th, and then also participation in the Europa League, and then 11th and quarter-final of the cup. And in the 2 completed years since he's come in, finished 10th and 14th with no decent showing in the cup, and obviously no European football. So they actually have pretty discernibly got worse, which points to the fact that although things weren't going well under Pleitz, like you say, it was more of a stagnation than a decline. So yeah, I mean the sort of the influx and outflux of managers since Windhorst has come in is kind of like he came in and just created this big vacuum of kind of chaos. Like, got Dardai leaving, and then you've got Kovac. I mean, at the time, they were trying to appoint Erik ten Hag, and that didn't work out, obviously, because they just lost the Champions League semi-final, and they were looking at Roger Schmidt or Andre Villas-Boas to kind of settled for Kovac in the end. And then you've got, Klinsmann. I mean, that was just an absolute disaster. Ended up resigning over Facebook. And then Nuri was there 4 games interim, and then you come back to Dardai, which makes you just really question, well, sort of Labbadia between that, but it just really is indicative of the fact that there is just no, that since Windhorst has come in, it's like there's been such a determination for success that but there's been a real absence of any plan. If after 2 years of 4 to 5 different managers, you just come back to the same gaffer that you had before Windhorst came in, and selling players after a year for a substantial loss. I think it's just, I mean, it's been reflecting the fact that they have not improved one bit since he's come in. Not that it's been him making the decisions, but the presence of all that money has clearly been too much too soon, and they've just spent it poorly.
I think it's a case of sort of a lesson of be careful what you wish for, because they're in a spot with Dardai that they were stable, no real danger of Bundesliga relegation or anything like that, but they did want to go to the next level and invested all that money. But it seems like you said, that they've been quite haphazard. There's no strategy, really. If you look at the different coaches they've had, it's not like they've always gone for the same type of manager. Like, they went for Čović, who was quite a German type appointment from within the club, someone that had spent time in the youth academy coaching a former player. That didn't work out. Then they went for Klinsmann, who's obviously a massive name. And then Nuri, that was just an interim, I suppose. But Labbadia, a sort of journeyman coach, steady hand, they thought could maybe steady the ship that season. And like they say, the move from Labbadia just straight back to Dardai again, and they're where they were 2 years before, isn't it? That doesn't work out a few months into the following season. Cork comes in, who's another one of the sort of journeyman coaches who it's sort of recognised that it can only take you to a certain point. And now he's been replaced by Magat, who's just sort of come out of the blue, who you would say is a journeyman German coach, but maybe in the 2000s. George, you want to come in?
Well, not really on Magat just now, but I think it was interesting when you're going through all the coaches in that time that you're wondering that to what extent is it Hertha's fault that all these managers are coming and going? What extent is it the fact that the managers are just terrible managers? But Jürgen Klinsmann is obviously not going to admit any of his own wrongdoing. A few weeks after his resignation, Bild published 22 of his private notes from his time in which he attacked Hertha's hierarchy and like I was saying, the lack of strategic thinking, so the lack of actual direction. And then at the time, obviously, Windhorst reacted pretty sourly to this, but in an interview of February of this year, Windhorst basically, it was in February this year that Windhorst admitted for the first time that it may have been a bit of a mistake in investing in Hertha. Maybe we can come on and talk about that. But he basically said, yeah, to be honest with you, what Klinsmann was saying in January 2020 or February 2020, wherever it was more or less right, and he did kind of agree with the criticism of the transfer policy and the internal culture. So it's kind of damning on the fact that Jürgen Klinsmann came in and within however is there, like 10 games or whatever, was like, right, this is an absolute shit show, I'm out of here, which shows that it's not a good environment for any boss, which is probably why one of the contributing factors to why they've been so poor. And obviously, Bobic has not had the time to really change that culture just yet. I do know that he's remodeled the scouting department. There's 7 new scouts in a wider net, apparently. And they've also moved to a more data-driven model. And they've restructured the youth team, like I said, in the academy. But there's just, I think, the issues of like the stadium and also the actual squad they have and the money they're losing is probably their two great an issues to be solved by just restructuring the academy, which is what Bobic has sort of sorted on immediately instead of maybe looking at some of the more pressing issues.
Yeah, I don't know what you think, Robert. I'm quite surprised at how, I suppose, just seeing Bobic and how successful he was at the helm at Eintracht Frankfurt, you expected sort of quick success, they would turn the club around quite quickly, but that's not really been the case. I wouldn't say the transfer policy has improved at all. They seem to be spending less money, but I'm not really sure if that's because of a lack of investment that's sort of dried up a wee bit. Just some of the transfers that they made during the summer, like Kevin Prince-Boateng and Ishak Belfodil, it doesn't really seem to be the mark of a club sort of with a forward-thinking transfer policy.
Yeah, definitely. That was the point I was going to make as well, because I think a lot of people would say that the strength of Eintracht Frankfurt was on the transfers that they made and the amount of hidden gems they managed to uncover. And so I don't know if it's sort of six and one and a half dozen of the other. Maybe Bobic wasn't quite as good at Frankfurt as people made out to be. Maybe it was more to do with the scouting department. Or maybe it's that he hasn't quite got the amount of control at Hertha that he needs to put through his ideas. Because that's, I think it's sort of an interesting point, what you were saying earlier. I mean, the managers they brought in, like Corker and Magatz, they're not like a Marcus Gisdol who's at least been sort of relevant in the past few years. They're people like Corker was last at Stuttgart in 2018. And I'm not even sure when the last time that Magatz was a manager. I think he was at Wolfsburg in like 2010 or something. So it's a very strange choice to make. And I think sort of talking about Windhorst as well, because this is sort of a situation that you see in England a lot more than you see in sort of that one, you see in Germany, is where you have someone who invests in the club and then they have a lot of power or have a lot of say at the club, even though they have no sporting background. So I'm not sure how much say Windhorst actually has, but it is quite interesting because obviously he's got a background in economics and finance and has no idea about football. And yeah, the interview that George alluded to earlier, where he was saying about how the club should be better run, and he said, "I counted on people being in positions of power at Hertha who want sustainable long term success. In the past, once it's become clear for some people, it's about retaining power and nepotism." And that's obviously a bit of a power play from him, where he's trying to get a bit more power for himself. And I think it was the presidium of Hertha who came out with a statement of their own saying, if you want to talk about this, talk about to us sort of behind closed doors. And I think that's sort of part of the problem with Hertha is they weren't a particularly stable club, as we alluded to beforehand. And then the money has made things even worse. And there's an open power struggle in public, which is just making them a bit of a laughing stock in German football on and off the pitch.
I think it's kind of interesting, given that we were talking about 50 plus one two or three weeks ago, that basically what Windhorst is essentially complaining about is that he's only got like 49 point something percent of the share of Hertha, and that he doesn't actually have he doesn't have any sort of special rights to make decisions that he wants. And I suppose, although as terrible as Hertha have done on and off the pitch, it's kind of scary to think that had he been able to completely take over the club, 100% of the club, and do whatever he wants, that they would have probably gone down already or even gone into liquidation. God knows what could have happened. But I think what he's basically saying in the interview is that, it came out kind of recently from a leak by a Hertha insider that Windhorst was actually sold a quite convincing story by one of the managing director of finance, who's called Ingo Schiller, who is said to also be a very charismatic, natural businessman like Windhorst, who sold Hertha as a sleeping giant, who, you know, in the big city club. And like you said, Robert, he doesn't know that much about football. So he kind of would have just seen this as something that he could add to his investment portfolio. But it's becoming increasingly pressing that with the company that Windhorst owns, Tenor Holdings, they currently apparently have a lot of number of projects who aren't getting much in return, but the asset of all of those who is losing the most money is said to be Hertha, because they've not received one penny of profit, with the shares currently worth way less than what they were bought for. So I think there's a sense of panic in Windhorst that it's looking like after two or three years of pretty terrible financial and footballing success, that he might be ready to pull the plug, which would kind of, I don't even know where that would leave Hertha, if that would potentially, I mean, it's difficult to say if they would leave them better or worse off, it would just make the whole last 3 years seem pretty pointless, I suppose. But I think it is interesting to consider that had 50+1 not been in place, or if they would also be better or worse off. I actually tend to argue they'd probably be even worse off.
Yeah, I suppose it's another argument for clubs not being able to be put under control of external influences who don't always have the best interests at heart. And if Vinthorst, someone that clearly doesn't know anything about football, and I don't know, I'm sure I saw this before, that he'd previously been made bankrupt as well.
He's been bankrupt twice, and he's also been found guilty of embezzlement worth roughly €900,000.
Did he own a funeral parlour as well?
No, he wasn't in the funeral parlour business. Probably where he's going wrong. He's invested in equestrian events, multi-use real estate, like the Eames Centre in Hanover. He's invested in a 1 million square feet residential business and shopping area, and a faltering shipyard, FSG. But they've always been profitable, apparently.
Was the ship called Hertha?
There's a steamer on the harbour.
The steamer called Fritz. But apparently what's come out in pretty recent reports is that essentially almost all of Vinthorst's investments are not profitable. And he's kind of like one of those people that's on The Apprentice, who's like always goes to be like project manager, and in the end is just ends up being all talk, and it just makes disastrous decisions the whole time, but makes good TV, because it does seem like he's pretty. I mean, he's losing a lot of money, and the key thing to remember or to distinguish is that the more and more all of his other businesses fail, the worse it is for Hertha, because the money that he's investing is not actually his money. He's not really anywhere near a billionaire. He's obviously a wealthy man, but I think he's only worth something like 250 million, which is obviously a lot of money. But it's not like when you see in the Premier League that the owners are doing it basically to, you know, because that's their own money. I think that's kind of in a way what Vinthorst was doing, to try and make it as a profitable investment, but also to bolster his own status. And he's failed in both of those. But given the fact that it's not his money that he's investing, and he's already been bankrupt twice, the future could look quite grim for Hertha if his finances continue to fail, and he's probably gonna. I imagine that he's probably have to pull the plug on Hertha in the pretty short to medium term.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with you that the situation at Hertha would definitely be a lot worse if 50+1 wasn't in place. I think if anything, this comes at a great time for all of those supporters of 50+1, as it shows what happens if you do bring an investor in, like is the case in pretty much most European countries other than Germany. And yeah, as we were saying before, they weren't in a particularly good position in the early 2010s, but the instability that the Windhorst has brought has made it even worse.
And just on and off the field pitch decisions have really culminated, and I think this season's been particularly bad, sort of bringing things back onto the football side of things. I don't know, the team in general is just the balance of the squad is pretty horrific. I think the team seemed to have a really significant problem of not being able to score goals, but also having a leaky defence. After 26 league games, only 26 goals has been scored, and 60 conceded with a goal difference of -34. And the most likely goal threat they've got is Stefan Jovetic, who has 6 league goals, but he's pretty injury prone. And then their other striking options are likes of Belfodil and Zelka, who aren't particularly reliable scorers, I would say. I think it's baffling that at this point they're still relying on Zelka, like considering where he was last season. Like, I don't know, he'd become a bit of a joke figure among Bundesliga fans, I think. after the time on loan at Werder Bremen and now coming back, and he's one of their main striking options. And then they've struggled with defensive pairings, got error-prone players like Boyata, Stark, brought in Mark Oliver Kempf from one relegation battling club to another, who hasn't really made the best of starts either. But I don't know, I feel like it's not, on paper, it's not one of the worst squads in the Bundesliga. I think George might disagree, though, because he seems to think that Hertha are worse than Greuther Fürth.
Yeah,
do you see the squad as particularly weak in terms of individual quality, or is it just more of a cohesion issue?
I think there's obviously good players in the team. I think as much as we've sort of berated the transfer policy, the one getting Serdar and Richter in particular, I've been pretty impressed with both of those. But like, I mean, having a reliance on Zelka and Jovetic is just not healthy or sustainable for the Bundesliga. I mean, their aggregate score against Leipzig this season is 12-1, which is just bonkers for a team that should be competing. And I do genuinely think that they're a worse team than Fürth. Sorry, I mean they recently lost to Fürth 2-1. To evidence my point. I kind of say this because through my work, I watch a lot of the games that people probably might not tune into, for example, a lot of the Fürth games. And I actually think you see a lot of fight in that team, and they often start sort of the first half pretty well, Greuther Fürth. But like Hertha, you kind of just see them play with just an absolute lack of enthusiasm, cohesion, quality, kind of like the game's already over by like first half. And I'm looking through some of the results, seeing some pretty high numbers just scrolled through here, like 5-0 to Bayern, 6-0 to Hertha, 4-0 to Mainz, losing the derby. They've lost all their games against Union as well, losing to Fürth, losing 6-1 to Leipzig, 3-0 to Hertha, 4-1 to 3-0 to Freiburg, 4-1 to Hertha. they probably would lose against themselves if they tried, to be honest.
But it's they lost 6-0 to Hertha and 3-0 to Hertha.
Well, it's just such a long list that
within that, within that ramble, there was a good point nowhere about the fight that you see on the pitch compared to Fürth. I think actually Bochum's a good comparison with a pretty limited squad, I would say. And in comparison, you see how much they fight. I think Hertha, one of Hertha's games a few weeks ago was, I think it was on the Sunday, and it was the same day as Fürth. No, the same day as Bochum were playing, I think. I think it was maybe the same day that Bochum played Leipzig, and you saw the fight that the promoted side showed. And Hertha, it's nowhere near that. They're just not the team... not the team bond that you see with some of the squads that you'd say man for man have lower ability. But I don't know what you think, Robert, but it's quite strange to me that despite all the money that they've invested, they're still relying on players like Pekarik and Darida, still Plattenhardt. But I think they are some of the more important players, and someone that I think even if they didn't have these players, they'd be in even worse position, because I think they're players that definitely have the best interests of the club at heart. They've been there for so long, and the rest of the players are more of a negative influence in the comparison.
Yeah, doing the research for the podcast, I'd just forgotten how many managers and how many players they'd have over the past 2 years. Just players like John Cordoba, Piontek, who were brought in with a lot of fanfare and for a lot of money and have just seemed to disappear again. I mean, Toussaint was supposedly one of the best talents in Europe when he signed, and he seems to have never seems to have started. As you mentioned before, Selke's a bit of a sort of meme figure in German football, sort of came to prominence at Werder Bremen in 2013-14, but then decided to go to Leipzig when they were still in the second division at that point. And I think quite a lot of the players that they signed sort of fit into this big city club mentality and sort of the image that they give across at the moment, where they're more attracted by the image of Berlin as a cool place to live rather than necessarily what they can bring on the pitch. And yeah, I just agree with both of you that they seem to have no cohesion, no fight on the pitch, and just the classic team of 11 individuals.
I think it's kind of interesting because we were saying this when Kyle was on with the Union episode, that it is strange that with a talent pool as big as Berlin, that the only players that you see in their team from their own academy are Mittelstädt, Dardai, off the top of my head,
Meyer. He's not really.
He's at Augsburg.
Yeah. So like
Gechter. I mean, there's a couple of players that.
Gechter, I don't know if he's scored the other day, but I mean, like in terms of the Leistungsträger, to use a German word, of the team, there's pretty much Mittelstädt's been pretty ever present, but what he brings in quality is maybe left something to be desired. But which is why it may come as good news I would say to any Hertha fans listening, they've almost certainly tuned out at this point, but or if they have even started listening, but that the new head of the academy is the academy director is Pablo Thiam, who was previously the academy director of VfL Wolfsburg, and like I said, they've increased their youth scouting more worldwide, and that the like I said, Bojovic has kind of maybe looked to the future in remodeling the academy, and you kind of see a 5-year a delay in when you might see the results from this. So it could be that 5 years from now, we're kind of talking about Hertha is kind of like the talent production like we see in something like Freiburg or in some of the NRV teams. But until you'd think that they're missing a trick, really, by not developing young players in Berlin from a young age and bringing them into it, because it would save them a hell of a lot of money for signing like horrendous players like Toussaint for as much as they have and what they had. The main thing I think about, just on a quick tangent here, the players they sign have all usually got horrendous attitudes, like Piontek, Toussaint, Luca Bacchio. Like, they are just players that do not look like they care at all.
There's a bit of a comparison with PSG, because I saw the point made when they went out of the Champions League that they're a side that don't take advantage of the talent pool around Paris. But, I mean, so many players that are produced that play for the French national team are from like the suburbs of Paris, but very rarely do you see young players come through at PSG and they go for sort of the more international big names. Hertha, obviously to a much lesser extent, do you think they're sort of trying to take the same approach? I mean, Paris was never seen as a sort of football capital. It's always been more Marseille is the football hotbed of France. And it's a bit similar to with Berlin, that no Berlin side has ever won the Bundesliga. Hertha are wanting to become that, but they're doing it in a way similar to PSG by spending lots of money, but not through the academy and through youth players, but by these international big names as well. But they're still sort of doing that in a way, like you say, the likes of Jovetic, who's a big name. He's played for Inter Milan, Man City, who I think is a good player, but he's old and he's injury prone. Do you see that as a valid comparison, Robert?
I think that's a great comparison, Colin. Also, without being an expert on Paris, because I think we talk about Berlin being I think this is more of the talk of sort of 4 or 5 years ago with the Copper 90 documentary about Berlin being a bit of a hidden gem in terms of football, which I think it is to a certain extent, and it is in the lower leagues, and it is in terms of the talent base that it has. but I still don't think that Berlin's a particularly big footballing city. A lot of the people that you know who live in Berlin aren't particularly big into football. And yeah, like I've never actually been to Paris and don't know much about Paris, but that's the impression you get from the city as well. There's not a huge amount of teams in Paris other than PSG. And so I think that's good attitude, because sort of looking into the history of the club as well, thinking about how they had about 3,000 fans at the Olympic Stadium when they were in the second division, and looking at sort of their history in the 80s being in the third division as well, they're just traditionally not a particularly big club. Either that might be a bit of a bold statement, but I think sort of them being in the midfield of the Bundesliga is probably about their level. So I don't think if they're necessarily without an investor sustainably can improve their position long term.
Yeah, I think to call Hertha a sleeping giant is a bit of a stretch, because it's only really based on sort of catchment area and the size of the city that they're part of, rather than any past success, I would say. I think probably like you say, it's not really a football city. There's not, in the same way that you see in other German cities, Hertha isn't as integral to the city, but I think it's probably because of Berlin being such an international city, so many people not being from the area, not only from other countries, but a lot of people from elsewhere in Germany come into Berlin. So probably if you looked at the clubs supported in Berlin, there's a lot of proportion that support other clubs because they've come from elsewhere in Germany. So it just doesn't really have that same impact on the city. I don't know what you think, George.
I think it's an interesting debate or kind of question to pose about the comparison to PSG. I probably somewhat disagree with that. I mean, if you look at the French national team, they all come from an area, a district that's surrounding Paris called Île-de-France. But if you look at the German national team, the only regular really is Toni Rüdiger, who's from Berlin. So, but I think the main difference I'd say is that when you look at PSG, for all the money they have, and you know the stars they have now, they are pretty representative of, from what I understand, they're pretty integral in the city. They're kind of pretty representative of the city, the diversity of the fan base. There's a very, very much pride in the club. Like in Hertha, although Hertha would never claim to be the club of Berlin, really, or to be, well, it never has been until it's been trying to be this big city club. I'd say there's more of an identity issue when it comes to Hertha. I mean, they're not an especially likable team for Berlin, as you could argue. I mean, they're miles outside of the city. They play in a stadium where the atmosphere isn't going to be as good because it's a 75,000-seater stadium. You know, they do things off the pitch that are not maybe, would I say, in line with a lot of the more cosmopolitan liberal ideas of Berlin. I mean, you've got like the thing with Jens Lehmann last year, saying that Dennis Ogo was one of the quota black guys. Had the thing with the goalkeeping coach giving an interview about to Hungarian press about his views against migration. Like I said, there's a lot of they don't tend to respond in a way that is very identifiable for Berliners, or I mean, that's not exclusive to Berliners, but I mean, they don't make themselves a very attractive club to support as someone living in Berlin. I would imagine. I don't live in Berlin, nor am I from there. And with the thing about the young players, probably is true. I mean, you can't. It's not necessarily a case that the volume of people means that you're going to have talent. I mean, if you look at South London. South London is a relatively small area of people, but you see so many players playing in the Premier League who are from a pretty small area in South East London. So maybe, yeah, Robert is right to an extent that it's probably the culture in Berlin is maybe not as well aligned with players going straight into, you know, Bundesliga academies and making it as professional footballers. And that's not something that, you know, Felix Magath or Freddy Bobic can change, to be honest. But
and to bring up Felix Magath and their plight, Hertha have turned to a man that probably most people thought had seen his time for Bundesliga management come and go. But he comes in and he's taken the squad till the end of the season. After, I mean, his last head coaching role in European football, he has been in China since then, but his last European role as a head coach was with Fulham in 2014, which led to relegation and pretty much maligned spell with Fulham, I would say. Wasn't very popular with his players, and I don't think he's really popular with any of his players, considering the reputation that you've heard over the last few days. And as he comes into Hertha, let's just say, I hope Davy Zelka likes cheese.
Is that for me to... Am I supposed to do something with that? Okay. I'm not sure I get the reference, but yeah.
I heard the story.
No, fill me in, Colin.
So the story was that when he was at Fulham, their Norwegian defender Breda Hangeland was injured, and Magath told him to rub cheese on his injury because they thought that would help it heal. So that he was like ridiculed by the Fulham players because of that, and I think just in general his training methods left a lot to be desired.
You do hear about, I had heard the cheese story before, but you do hear about the fact that he's gained the reputation as well, former Eintracht Frankfurt player, Bakary Salou, calling him the last dictator in Europe. There was the story we were talking about before we started recording, when he took his Wolfsburg side, they said they were going out for a day out to the Alps in Switzerland, I believe. And they said they could have, was it a piece of cake or something? And he said you can only have it.
Something like it. So they were going to, the players were told that they were going to a cafe at the top of the mountains or something like that. But they were all told to wear their training gear. But I think they all thought they were just going to be like going to the cafe, but they ended up having to run all the way up.
Yeah, I believe friend of the podcast Graffiti passed out. Is that right? Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah. So I mean, and it's probably quite fitting that it's going to be interesting to see how it balances out. I've been saying what a terrible attitude all these Hertha players have. I mean, I can't imagine that he would have been a fan of Luca Bacchio with him trotting around the whole time, acting like he owns the place. And, you know, with a lot of the Hertha players, their pretty horrendous attitudes, will be interesting to see how they get on with maybe some of the more outdated methods that Magath may have. Something that's been quite popular in the German Twitterverse in the last couple of days is kind of poking fun at how out of touch with the times Magath may be, suggesting that kind of expected goals may be a confusing metric for him. Given that they're often not whole numbers, wondering how you can score 2.63 goals, for example. But I think, you know, I read somewhere that he's kind of like, someone said he was like the Sam Allardyce of German football. So yeah, that's a bit harsh on Sam Allardyce, to be honest. I think Sam Allardyce is pretty nice figure, maybe more.
Yeah, as I say, he's quite a jolly character. Imagine Sam Allardyce being Santa Claus, but I don't imagine Felix Magath being Santa Claus.
I would like to offer a better comparison. Although I'm currently looking at a picture of Felix Magath from the 1970s, and it's in that, it's in 1985. And it's in that grain of filter that you see a lot of like American serial killers. and he's got those kind of weird glasses from the 80s, and he's kind of looking at me in a way which makes me think I shouldn't be speaking so illy of him. He's got quite a menacing face. But it, yeah, I mean, I can't actually think of a manager in the English speaking world that you might compare him to. Maybe a Mick McCarthy, perhaps.
I don't know. I feel like a lot of the journeyman English managers that you talk about, they're still making a living in the game. Like, that's not true, is it?
I'm gonna offer up Roy Keane as a comparison. Roy Keane. A great player in his own time, but obviously as a manager very much relied on his name as a manager and the fact that he was known as a scary bastard. Because I mean, you see the way that Roy Keane analyzes the game on Man United, on Sky Sports about Man United. I mean, when you see him analyzing it, it's obvious to see why he wasn't a very good manager, because he has no sense of empathy. And I think that's maybe a bit the same with Magat.
That's quite a good point. Like,
thank you.
The sort of stereotypical English sort of old fashioned managers, most of them have clearly adapted to the times to some extent, like Sam Allardyce, for as much that he gets sort of branded as like a long ball merchant. I know he has sort of been quite, he was quite keen to bring in like sports science methods to his clubs and stuff like that, and he's obviously adapted to some extent to modern times. With Magat, I mean, hasn't been in German club football as a head coach for over a decade. So I think in this scenario, it might be warranted that he's got the reputation as being out of touch. And I don't know, it just seems like a volatile character from his time as, I know he had his role at Würzburger Kickers as well, and went through about three coaches within the first few games, and I think
he ran them into the ground. I mean, he's kind of getting Neil Warnock, I want to beat Plymouth so fucking much vibes. thinking about Magat talking about how he wants to beat Bochum at home or something.
I love Neil Warnock though. Like Neil Warnock's a character though. Like you can imagine having a laugh with Neil Warnock, but I just don't see that from Felix Magat.
That's very true. Although I would say I'm very easily it takes a lot to make me surprised these days. But the last two kicker notifications I've got on my phone saying that Typhoon Korkut was manager of Hertha BSC and then Felix Magat are two things that surprise me. And sort of talking about funny anecdotes as well, if people haven't seen it already, I'd very much implore them to watch the last video of Typhoon Korkut, one of his last training sessions, where he used some Denglish, which maybe even Roy would have been proud of, where he was saying, I'm here up to shit, you're up to shit. And then he changed into German and said, die scheiß Sonne blendet mich, like the sun's in my eyes, ich trainiere hier keine Jugendmannschaft, like I'm not training a youth team. So I think that was quite interesting as well. I think that was something they picked up on Sky, how the fact that Korkut, quite a lot of his the things that he talked about were the team talks he did were in English, because of how many international players they have. But I've gone off on a bit of a tangent there.
Not too much longer in our discussion, but I thought I'd finish with a couple of questions for you. So do you think the appointment of Magat is a sensible appointment in the long term? No, in the short term, sorry, obviously, because it's only until the end of the season. Is he someone that can maybe whip the team into shape, improve fitness, give them a bit of motivation? Or do you think the modern footballer is just a person that will not respond to his notorious methods that are seen as out of date?
You could look at a comparison, maybe like when Friedhelm Funkel took over at Köln for a bit, and you see quite often German clubs, in recent memory, trying to plug in a kind of Allardycean figure, if you will,
A firefighter.
A firefighter. Yeah, yeah. and it doesn't tend to really work. I mean, it's not a kind of a question exclusive to German football, but I kind of think there's too much distance between the Hertha players and what Magath's going to want, and realistically, he needs to act pretty soon. I always do kind of think there's a sort of element of accountability on behalf of the players. I mean, they currently find themselves second bottom in a real scrap with, I mean, it's probably a good time to question who they're actually fighting against. You probably say it's going to be between them, Stuttgart, Bielefeld and Augsburg. I don't know if you'd include, either of you two would include Gladbach in there. But whatever he comes in and does, there's not much room for error because, you know, if not going down automatically, two of those four teams, kind of without sounding like Mike Lowen, are going to be in a precarious situation, whether it's going down automatically or playing. What we'll probably have to admit is probably going to be quite a strong team from the Zweite Bundesliga this year. This year, probably more than any, seems like a year in which a team from the Bundesliga might lose to a Zweite Bundesliga team. I personally think that the Hertha would definitely lose to, Darmstadt, Pauli, HSV, Nuremberg, Schalke. Just think they've just got a terrible team, to be honest. As I said, I think they're by far the worst team in the Bundesliga. I don't know what you two think of that. I acknowledge that was in no way the question you asked me. I've moved on to talking about something completely different. But
well, sort of to bring it together, do you know who the last coach was that got Hertha relegated? Who was in charge when they relegated?
No.
It was Otto Rehhagel. Ancient,
the Greek freak.
Never heard that before. But,
well, no, anyway. That's what they call.
Plays in the NBA.
Yeah, Giannis. But I mean, what's his name?
Very similar.
He won the Euros with Greece. So I would add
another ancient relic from the past, though, that came in and was brought in to save the club. And the means in which they're relegated was in the relegation playoff, one of the few Bundesliga sides that have ended up going down after finishing 16th. And they lost to Fortuna Düsseldorf. So maybe history is about to repeat itself, bringing in an ancient relic and losing to a Zweite Liga side in the playoff. Maybe it's not even going to be that good for them. Maybe they'll go down automatically.
Do you keep saying relic because he was the manager of Greece?
No, because he was old.
So it's got nothing to do with Greece.
I'll pretend that I made that.
All right, I'll be pretty impressed because it's the imagery of your like stoic Greek god being
a statue of a Greek statue.
Yeah, exactly. Being slain by Roy Campbell and Hasval is quite quite distressing in all honesty. But I mean, actually, who we may as well kind of make a prediction of where Hertha are going to finish here. I mean, they're currently second bottom level. Well, only yeah, they're. Yeah, their second bottom, Stuttgart ahead of them, Bielefeld and Augsburg. So I couldn't see which one was goal difference and which one was points, goal difference on games played. So I was thinking, surely they haven't only scored six goals, but that's because they've won because the kick of it. What's going to happen, Colin? Right. You're in your jacket, your Hertha jacket.
Your jacket.
Right, well, in January, we were asked to make our bold predictions, and my bold prediction was that Stuttgart would get relegated. I still think Stuttgart made a bit of a revival recently, but with the injury troubles, you know, Salas is back out. I suppose Kalajdzic is scoring again, but I do think there's still a side that could potentially struggle. I'm going to stick with Stuttgart finishing 17th. I'll say Hertha will finish 16th and they will lose the playoff against the team in the Zweite Liga.
I'm going to say one thing. Absolutely.
No, actually not. I think Hertha will win the playoff and stay up.
Against whom?
Against, right. So who's going to be?
Hansa Rostock.
I think Hertha. if only Hansa were that high. So I think Hertha will beat Schalke in the playoff.
That's an interesting prediction.
I can see Schalke choking on the big stage.
That is a bold prediction.
Whatever happens, I think we can all agree Augsburg have fucking got away with it for another year by the looks of it. If they stay up again, bloody hell. Every single year they do this, they just finish 14th, 15th. Will this be their 12th season if they stay in the Bundesliga? They will successfully
stay. Well, when was La Decima?
2 years ago. That was at the end of 2021. Was it? Oh, season. No, it was the end of 1920, I think.
I think it was 2 years ago. I think this is 12th. Yeah,
so,
or at least the 12th time they've stayed up.
So is that,
I don't is know. That, it's over a decade, and it was too long. It's been too long, and they need to be relegated, but it's never going to happen. I don't think I'll ever predict Augsburg to get relegated.
My Spanish isn't great. Is that that's not that wouldn't be La Decima, would it? I would say probably not.
I think it might be.
I don't know anything about Spanish, Robert. You know your Spanish.
I do. I think it's we haven't got to the 12th just yet.
Either way, this podcast wasn't. I mean, it's kind of like one of those certainties in life that everything comes back to how the fuck are Augsburg still in the Bundesliga? And yeah, this is where we are again. I'm looking at them. I'm staring them down in 14th.
Having said that about my predictions, Armenia are looking pretty weak. They can't score goals. And I think they've sort of had a good spell of the season.
They probably get quite
a good togetherness about them that Hertha don't. I don't know what you think, Robert. What's your prediction?
Thanks, Colin. My bold prediction is that Hertha are going to be 17th. But I'm very similar to George in that my predictions are more ruled by my heart than my head and my allegiance to Union and the fact that I think it would be good for them to get relegated to hopefully finally put the 50+1 question to bed, at least for another few years in Germany. I think it would be good if they get relegated, and I'm hoping that they do.
Sad.
That's sad. My opinion is that down the bottom, you have teams that are unlucky and you have teams that are really bad. I would say that this season, Bielefeld have been more unlucky and they've been really bad, personally. I think that quality-wise and tactics-wise, I actually think that they've been pretty impressive. They seem to be actually not too dissimilar to Fürth, but obviously Fürth do lack a bit of quality, do tend to get a bit unlucky. Whereas I place Hertha, Augsburg, Stuttgart in teams that are bad at football right now or this season. And therefore, I feel like Bielefeld don't deserve to get relegated. It is very tight down there. I really can't remember what I actually predicted. I predicted Augsburg to go down, Fürth and Augsburg. I'll stick to that. And I say Hertha might finish in that. I just have a feeling they're just going to somehow sliver out of it. But I'm just looking at the Zweite Liga table here. There's five or six teams there that could definitely beat them. Well, I'm looking at the Zweite Bundesliga team. There's actually 18 teams in the league, and I reckon all them. They could beat them. So
I feel like I always get sucked into thinking, seeing how bad the teams are at the bottom of the Bundesliga, and thinking that the Zweite Liga sides will have enough to beat them. I would say this season does feel slightly better. I think the quality of the league and Zweite Liga has been very good this season. And also, in previous years, it always seems to have worked out that it ends up being that big club in the Bundesliga playing a smaller club, sort of underdogs in the Zweite Liga. It might be different this year with the amount of, I mean, Werder Bremen, Schalke, Hamburg could easily be one of those sides in third. And I mean, Hertha are a big club, but for once, I would say in that scenario, they would be the smaller club in that tie, which would be a different dynamic in terms of expectations. It might move more of an even footing, and the Zweite Liga club has more of a confidence that they'll manage to overcome the top flight club. I'm not. It's all speculation. For all we know, Hertha are going to be terrible for the rest of the season, finishing 17th anyway, and it would be another club in the Bundesliga that ends up in the playoff. But we'll see how these predictions work. I don't know where the long-term future will lie if they do get relegated. I can't see Magath staying around beyond the end of the season, though, given it definitely seems just like a short-term fix. But we'll see how the rest of the season goes.
Is that not the point, though, that, like, that, I mean, that Hertha don't know what the long-term plan is either, evidently, in the appointment of Magath. So for us to sit and say we're not sure about the long-term, where they're going to be next year, I mean, I don't think Hertha know where they're going to be next year, which is probably why they're in so much trouble in the first place.
And perhaps an interesting point for the long-term future of Hertha is that their lease on the Olympiastadion ends in 2025. And for the past few years, there have been talks of a new stadium in the Schenkendorfplatz or Brandenburg Park in Ludwigsfelde. And in fact, a new idea that came out last year from the Senate in Berlin was turning part of the old airport in Tegel, a part of the sort of runway, or not quite the runway, but the part of the airport buildings there, into a stadium for Hertha. So that's another interesting aspect.
Yeah, because you've always heard about the stadium and hoping by 2025. That's always seemed like a long time away, but we're only 3 years away from that now. It's sort of COVID sped time up, I think, that we're almost there. That's quite something to ponder for the future, not just on the pitch, but in terms of the stadium, because I think it's a very vital part of the sort of argument for how the club is managed, and the stadium is something that's been a barrier, I think, for a while to the club's potential, something that's held them back in a lot of ways. So as much as the club's performance on the pitch is going to be something to keep an eye on, the future of the ground and whether they do bring plans forward to get their own is something that's really important to the club's future, I would say, as well. I think that rounds up our discussion on the Alte Dame, covering some of the reasons why Hertha have got themselves into this state. Investment from Windhorst, the appointment of Felix Magath, and also where this leaves the club for the future. And thanks to George and Bob for joining me as ever. And also a big thanks to the listeners who I hope enjoyed hearing us ramble on about Hertha this week. And we'll see you again soon.